This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3111 for Monday, the 6th of July 2020. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for June 2020 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 60 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: Dave struggles to keep Ken on track as they talk about released and comments hosted in June 2020.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, community news for June 2020. Joining me live from Scotland. It's Dave Morris.
Hello, everybody. I think live is a relative term, but yes.
Well, live for me, Dave. Live for me.
Yes. Good, yes. How's everything?
Everything is going okay-ish. Kids are busy here in the back room dusting.
Oh, excellent.
Child labour. It's terrible.
Yeah, mine are a bit too old to get them to get them to do that sort of stuff now, I'm afraid. They'd be more likely to get me to do it for them.
Yeah, true enough. So, this is HPR, Hacker Public Radio, is a community podcast network. Which is kind of probably needs a bit of explaining as to what that is. We are a family of shared, so it's one single podcast, but people contribute shows to that podcast. And oopsie. And the people who contribute shows are not are the people who listen to the episode. So essentially anybody can contribute to this podcast that is Hacker Public Radio. So this is the community news show done by some of the janitors around here, so we main thing we do is look back in the shows for the last month, so that if you missed something, at least Dave and I have commented on it. People are welcome to join as well. We've switched it now to 1400 UTC, which works out a lot better for me.
Yep, good.
So technically, my 50 megabit fiber has gone down to half a megabit upload, and it is killing me. It's killing me at the minute. So there's an engineer coming out on Monday to have a look. So if this show is... the audio is a bit crap, you probably know why. So we start off by introducing the new host. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, there's going to be a deafening silence because there are no new hosts this month, sadly.
How is that possible? How is that possible, Dave? When you look at the numbers, the download numbers, and you look at the number of hosts that we've had in our entirety, there's only about 10%, Dave. Where are the other 90%, the silent masses? Have they nothing to speak? Have they no contributions to make to the network? Why? Why do they do this to me every week, Dave? Every month we have the same thing.
It's terrible.
Do you feel guilty now? Not you, obviously. Do you listening to this who hasn't contributed to the show? Okay. Anywho, enough of this craziness. They must have put something in the water here because I'm acting a little bit funny. So let's have a look at what went on last month. Community news show, we did. Did we? Or did I forget to turn up for that one as well.
No. That was, yeah, it's definitely, it says here Ken was on board this time in my notes.
Got his arse together, figured out how to use a clock.
But my connection went down and came back up again. So it's a good thing you were around, otherwise it would have been even more embarrassing.
Screwed, so, didn't you? No comments on that show, so we didn't say anything controversial. Ha ha. Be plenty of comments on this show. Lots of controversial stuff coming up later. Stay tuned. But first show of the month was the phonetic alphabet, which is, I put in the ham radio section, and there was one comment that was from CRVS. Do you want to do that one, Dave?
Yes, CRVS says, you forgot November. So in the end, I finally got the chorus of that one Bloodhound Gang song for which this episode is relevant. Nice. I have no idea what he's talking about. But I'm trying to.
So out of it, Dave.
Anyway, the phonetic alphabet is a fun thing. Yes. I used to have it written out and pinned on the wall beside my desk at work. I should do that again, actually. Should make sure I've got one nearby, because it's a useful thing to have in your head.
It's, I use it all the time. It was one of the things on the. I worked in the help desk, and it was one of the things you learned straight off, because we had to have an international one, because every country has got their own versions of it. In the Dutch one, they have like names, Zantippe and S for Zantippe, X, kind of weird one that they have. Well, not weird one, obviously. It's perfectly normal if you're Dutch, but it's not phonetic. Yeah. So the reason the NATO came up.
You should record one.
Oh, you see what he's doing there?
As a reply to Cloud 2's episode. That would be great.
We need
different languages. The Mandarin one and the...
Exactly.
Swahili one. I'm looking forward to it already.
Cool. Actually, if you're a Dutch listener and you haven't contributed to the show, that's might be a good introduction one. So the following day we had what is now a series, Dave, Matchbox Cars, and we popped that in under model hacking, creating, restoring, painting all sorts of models from RPG characters to model cars. I like that. And it was one of Tony Hughes's, aka Tony H1212. Did you ever tell us what that H1212 thing is?
No, I was just thinking. I've never asked him. We should get the story at some point.
Yeah,
we could do a show.
That will be a show. Exactly. Tony would have no problem doing that.
Yeah.
So I don't think there were any comments on that one. The following day, we had for my entertainment, how I have my file server and media center put together. And this was by Archer72. Nice little episode, this one, about using Slackware. Nice overall introduction to setting everything up. And I must admit, I copied the Samba snippet myself as I was setting up something there.
Yes, so pretty nice, cool. Nice notes. The thing that struck me, it was sort of notes that you can go back and dig into later on and understand. It's very good.
Yeah, always big fans of the old show notes here, Dave and I.
Indeed.
So again, no comments on that. So we will move on to a show that had two comments, and that was Advanced Inmap Tips, Locating Computers on the Enterprise Network, where Operator Put Me to Shame. Put me to shame. My episode 3052, Locating Computers on the Network. Do you want to do the first one?
Yeah, I'll do Be Easy's reply. Comment, thanks for reminding me, he says. Good episode. Thanks for reminding me that I know nothing about networking. Well, it's you and me both, Jim.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually. There should be more networking shows here, people. Don't assume that people know how to do this stuff. So
No. It's got so much more complicated than I used to be in charge of it at one point when we were running X25. And X25 is relatively simple, but once you got into packet rings and all these other weird things, and then Ethernet, I started to lose the plot.
Yeah, but it's pretty much Ethernet now is the everything goes to Ethernet now.
Yeah.
By and large. Anyway, CM Hobbs says, quality episode. Really enjoyed this one. Find myself nodding along in agreement and finishing some of your sentence. Lots of good refreshers and some new tips in here for me. Thanks a ton for submitting this one. Dave.
Yep.
Would that be a... let me just look into the ether there. Do I see CM Hobbs raising his hand? Submitting a few series, a few episodes in a series there?
Well, yeah, I think it might be. It could be.
Oh, Lordy. Another one on the router thing, OpenBSD server, building a new Wi-Fi router and server from Zenfloater. This one I listened to while my daughter was in the dentist, social distancing, etc. And it was good that the show notes were here. You went through them as well. But I've not really done a lot with BSD. But this was interesting to see the approach.
Absolutely. There were things here which rang vague bells from the days of Cisco networking and firewalls and stuff. But different and intriguing. So yeah, most fascinating.
Not at all complicated, but just now that you know how to, easy once you know how to do it type thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but also relatively easy to mess up if you don't know what you're doing. Just going by our experiences way back, setting up fancy firewall rules and stuff, and then getting a consultant in who said, "You did it all wrong, mate. You did it all wrong. You should have done this and then this." Oh, okay then, right, fine. That's why it wasn't working then.
Yeah, exactly. Norrist says, read-only router. The idea of running your home router off a read-only file system is very interesting. To which Zenfloater1 replied,
read-only routes. You can set up Figuita, I think it's the nice one, via OpenBSD to actually lock all root access rights off. In this case, the file system is read into memory on boot. Then that file system is locked down for the duration. No one can make any changes to the system from that point forward. It could be run in QEMU and even lock down what drives could be accessed with the DD command as well. This makes any kind of attack absolutely impossible.
Wow.
Impressive.
Interesting. Yeah. Hello, Dave?
Oh, yeah, I'm here, yeah. Sorry.
So, speaking of... No, that was interesting, actually, the whole... read-only thing.
Yeah, I've never come across such a thing. But yeah, you learn a lot, don't you, on this HBR thing?
You do indeed. Speaking of which, pens, pencils, paper, and ink, part two. Another one that we made, The Art of Writing, an open series on writing tools, media, supplies, and techniques. In this show, Dave talks about pens, pencils, writing, paper, and ink. Actually, this was useful. This is the one where you explained the a review of some pens. Is this the one where you went through the type of paper or stuff? Is that the next one?
Do you know, I can't remember. must have. I did mention paper. Yeah.
The feathering and that sort of stuff. Found that very useful to know.
Yeah, it's a thing that you're bound to trip over if you're into that sort of a pen and stuff. So there's a lot of crappy paper out there. I didn't get any comments on this, but I did get an email from Zoke, who was saying something to the effect that I don't know whether I should be sending in a show in this series, to which I said, send us a show.
Absolutely, yes.
So, hopefully we will be hearing from Zoke at some point or other. So hope he's listening. Yep, cool. Would like a show, please.
Been a while. Somebody could do with sending in a show.
Indeed.
This is Claudio Miranda's response to Linux in-laws. Bit more history about the next step computer program, and Monochromic says, a review of the review. Thanks for the valuable feedback, Claudio. We'll tackle that as part of a future episode. And true to his word, he does. Following day, Sigflop, our lead hacker. Holy crud, I have a Kinesis Advantage 2 keyboard. Wow, that looks weird.
Yeah, I know. I mentioned this to my son. Said, "I, you ever heard of them?" He says, "Dad, I've got one." I said, "Oh, okay.
Oh,
I'm somewhat out of touch with the level of sophistication of my own children."
We spent an hour talking to you about it.
Yes, that point at which you dozed off. So yeah, but these are most impressive things. He said, my son said, "You can borrow it if you like, but having looked at this, I don't." It's a standard layout in the keys. They're not Dvorak or anything, but quite.
Maybe we should describe it. It's like as if you've got a plank, a rectangle, and somebody has taken two ice cream scoops out from the top left and the top right, and then put half the keyboard keys in there on either side, and you just sit in that ice cream scoop thing, and at your thumbs there are more keys like delete and enter and backspace and stuff.
Yep. It looks really,
I can't
really
type, nice. Touch type, so that's a problem. But
it would be a good thing to learn on, actually. I did borrow a keyboard from my son as a consequence of this show, and it's a Gold Touch keyboard, which is one of these sort of flatter type keyboards, but it's split into two, so you can put it in various orientations that suit the positions where your hands are. Because with both your hands together, quite close together on a standard keyboard, you can end up with shoulder issues after if you're using it day in, day out. So these types of keyboards are quite good for wrist action, you know, repetitive strain injury, shoulder issues, etc. So, but I'm crap at it. I'm absolutely awful. I'm too old to learn this sort of new stuff, but give it a go.
Anyway. Weird thing about that too old to stuff is, you know, you say it and then 20 years later you're still going, "Fuck it, I should have said that. I should have learned that 20 years ago."
Yeah. I'm giving it a try.
Anywho, do you want to do CM Hobbs's
comment? CM Hobbs says, "Great keyboard. I've been using it at Kinesis Advantage for years. Owner of two, and I love them. They've helped with my RSI quite a lot. Couple of notes. The escape and function keys are membrane, I'm pretty sure. One can also program the keyboard to beep on all key presses, which is useful to avoid bottoming out. I agree with your 2-week skill acquisition time with the keyboard. I find that many years later, I still want to use the Advantage plus and equals and tilde locations on any other keyboard. Thanks for sharing this one."
Cool. Following day, Ahuka comes along with a GIMP series, an overview of the open source graphics program with a focus on photographic issues. And there are two comments on this one. The first one is Brian in Ohio. "The GIMP, great show. My wife and I are both avid bird watchers, and this year I added taking pictures of them, the birds, to the mix. And I wanted to process some of these photos, and I often thought of the GIMP. Looking forward to more tutorials. If they're half as good as the LibreOffice set, they'll be awesome. Thanks for the show."
That's a great comment. Ahuka says, "I'm glad it helped. I'm glad you liked it. I've had one more already uploaded in the queue. I've just finished writing a third one, so there is more to come." Yeah, great stuff. As Brian says, if it's a hooker and he's doing a series on something like this, you're gonna learn a lot, I think.
Absolutely, because that LibreOffice series is legendary now at this point. So, following day, CM Hobbs tried something new, which was a rambling walk on his a rambling show while he was taking his mandatory lockdown walk, I guess, about putting a new PC together. This is interesting because I basically just switched to Pis now, and failing that, Chromebooks, which I convert to real Linux machines. Did he give, and I, that said, I bought a secondhand, it was a damaged machine, which was new. So, but it was around the same price as a Chromebook, $250, but it was a good machine. Mm-hmm. That said, did he say how much this was going to be? Did he give us a price?
don't recall him saying. No. I didn't make any notes on it.
I made a conscious effort to listen, but I don't think he mentioned a price during this. It would be nice to know what it was.
It's quite an interesting configuration. So you'd think it would cost a few pennies.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I could go figure out how much all of this would be, but then again, it's never going to be the same price as a Raspberry Pi, so you know what I mean.
No, it's true. I did build a computer back in 2013. I haven't done anything since, and it cost me a fair bit, but I've been really happy with it. It's lasted a long time. I imagine this one is going to be the same. It's going to have a lot of life to it.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Mike Brem says, a productive walk. It's been at least 15 years since I attempted to pick all the parts and build my own PC. But after hearing your talk, I think I'll give it another try. Thanks for the inspiration.
And CM Hobbs replies, reproductive walk. Glad to hear it. It was not nearly as challenging as I had expected given the tools on PC Part Picker. The hardest part was actually finding things that could ship. I had to swap parts on the build here and there via that site before I finally got everything together, but it wasn't awful. Happy building. Cool.
I hadn't seen the link. You didn't have a link to PC Part Picker in the show notes. Might have a browse of that to see what it's about. It's a bit like tweakers.net probably over here, price comparison website.
Yeah.
Anyway, following day, Linux Outlaws, the big blue button. And this was a talk to Fred Dixon, the product manager of Big Blue Button. And there were two comments. One was by an anonymous listener. Free software licensing. The discussion about licenses and contribution agreements was interesting and informative. For example, I really liked the way Fred explained how the LGPL works in the context of projects like the Big Blue Button and how it compares to the AGPL. Thanks for the show.
And a hookah comments. Good interview. I really enjoyed the interview. Good solid information about an open source project. Yeah, good. Excellent.
Yep.
I think our Linux user group is using Big Blue Button. I've not actually used it myself yet, but I think that's what they've decided on as a way of doing, you know, virtual meetings and stuff. So I'm most intrigued to see what it's like.
Yeah, like to have a comparison of that and Jitsi and other video open, a comparison of open video platform solutions, why you would use one over the other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Tony Hughes's Matchbox Restoration Part 3. And these cars are in a bad state, really. But as it goes along, you will see them develop, which is kind of cool. And then
it's fascinating. I love the pictures. Thanks, Tony, for the pictures, because it really gives you a deep insight into what's going on there and some of the history of this sort of stuff. Fantastic.
How to put them together. I was always able to take them apart, but never had. I'm interested to see how he puts them back together.
Yes.
That's still to come, I'm afraid. So in Linux In-Laws, the review of the review. So this was, I think, the one where they were talking about Claudio's comments as well. And Claudio himself commented, all according to my plan. You really thought I wouldn't have done my research before recordings. Fools! I had already found out about the new pricing scheme from an inside source from the deep web way before my review, and given the changes, all the red tape usually involved in such a things, I knew it was worth putting that information out there to humankind. And since your assumptions of my lineage was an extra benefit, I'm not Italian, I can now leak this cable from the fraternia Dave had me
Fratellanza Decorazioni.
And he has a link there. Hack the planet. The truth is out there. I want to believe. Thanks for the recursive review, my skin is pretty thick. Yep.
Yes,
I'll leave
yes.
it to the listener to go back and listen to the show to find out what that's all about.
I love the thought that Claudio is Italian. They were doing terrible Italian accents.
I was going, hey, why are they doing Italian accents? Oh, that's good. Okay, maybe they're trying to do a Spanish accent or a Mexican accent. I don't know. Okay. Yes. Or like me, there's one accent, whatever happens to come out at that particular time.
Oh, I know, yes. Me too.
Anywho, one that was way a podcast recommendation for your consideration is kind of what I'm thinking of calling these things. Maker's Corner from our own very good friends, Yannick et al. And they had John and Phil on, along with Nate, of course, to talk about the 32 BLIT. And this was an interview. It's not really representative of their show, but their show is awesome. It contains anything that you're interested, anything if you're interested in electronics and a little bit of hardware hacking, the interface of people and hackers and machines, then this is a podcast for you. Really, really cool. Good stuff.
Yes, indeed. I hadn't actually heard this show yet because I always run with a huge backlog of podcasts. So it was great. It was a great show. And the two Pimaroni guys are very impressive. And the interview was really well done, I thought.
Yeah, they know their stuff. Do you want to do the Brian in Ohio?
Yes, Brian in Ohio says, a book recommendation. This guy, Seth Kenlan, wrote a book that might be useful for a budding game programmer using the 32-BLIT. Developing games on the Raspberry Pi, app programming with Lua and Love, and he has friends that need coffee.
So, don't know. Sounds like a dodgy character to me.
Well, yeah, never heard of him. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So, but the Lua business is interesting. Is it something you've got into yourself? I've not
just yet. No.
It's one of my.
It's only a matter of time, though. Eventually, yeah. Like eventually, there will be a 3D printer in this room. Eventually, it really is only a matter of time.
We'll unless be hearing I get it. Well, you'll be hearing actually, it churning away in the background during computer. Yeah.
Well, actually, I would really prefer a small CNC milling machine and a CNC lathe. I always wanted one of those.
Yes. There are some people who've. Well, is there not a 3D printer that will also do some fairly lightweight CNC work as well? I think there is. But I've seen people hack them into CNCs as well. Yeah. Should be interesting.
Anywho, Andrew Conway did a surprisingly good show on metrics, and I know that he is trying to tempt us to the dark side of teaching maths here on HPR, but we will not be conned. No, we will not.
But yes.
This was a good show, actually. I really wish my maths teachers were as interesting as Andrew was back in the day. They were not, alas.
Yes, agreed. No, I thought it was great. I really enjoyed this. I listened to it while I was doing some domestic thing and made a note. Go back and listen again with, and think about what he's talking about, because it was a little bit hard to digest if you're not really very mathematically inclined. But I tried to use polar coordinates at one point during my biology career, and it is a very handy way of doing stuff when you were trying to work out paths that things take, etc. And so it was a very welcome show, I thought. There is apparently a typo in it which Andrew mentioned, but I haven't heard what needs fixing, but I'll deal with it when he sends me the details.
That's the handle I was trying to think of.
All right.
McNally. No, good show. I hope there's more of them, to be honest.
Indeed, indeed.
Yes. Yes. Infinitesimals. I thought, that sounds like a hack round to get round to shoehorn the maths in. Quantities which are very, very, very small, but not zero. That sounds suspiciously like a clause in a on a web terms and conditions, you know.
Yeah. But then anyway, I've been listening to astronomy podcasts just recently. A guy talking about the Large Hadron Collider, and he tended to talk in the same way. These astronomers, as I put it down to, they have a different way of dealing with the world. Anyway, so shall I do Clinton's?
Yeah, please. I'm looking up something here.
Looking forward to further episodes, says Clinton Roy. Thanks for this episode. It's a nice, gentle introduction to the topic. I definitely look forward to future episodes.
Yeah, we had Charles and Jay had a series there on practical math. I wonder, is this one that we should add to that? Anyway, yeah. Brian in Ohio says, more episodes. Keep going with this great topic. Couldn't agree more.
We missed out Ahuka, who also said, excellent. I'm looking forward to more shows from this person.
No, I deliberately skipped over. You don't know the background rivalry between me and Ahuka going on. That thing.
I believe every word you say.
Yeah. God, I'm in a weird mood today. Anywho, so long as I'm staying here recording the HBR show, I don't need to get involved in the family cleaning of the house that's going on. So keep talking. So the next show is RFC 5005 Part 2, Webcomics Readers, and where they continue the discussion about the RFC for atom feeds and stuff. Again, still have not convinced me that it is better.
No, I'm not really able to make a judgment because I haven't looked at all the ins and outs of this, but it was a fascinating subject and an interesting discussion, and I love their enthusiasm about this. It's great, but yeah, I must go and, I think I said before, dig into RFC 5005 myself a little bit just to see what's going on.
Yeah, it depends on whether we might adjust the way HPR produces shows in order to accommodate that. But the fact that you can't add an archive feed, am I correct or not in saying,
Blackie, that's right.
Can you?
Go on, sorry.
Yeah. So like if we have right now, we have 10 shows in the, so 2 weeks in the main feed and then everything else is the archive feed. So that means that every day the archive feed gets updated as a new show comes into the main feed, the archive feed gets updated. So if you can't do that, what is the point?
Yeah. That was a point they did raise in the first show, that the archive is regarded to be immutable once it's created. So yeah, which is going to make life difficult for many people, including us.
Mm-hmm. So it would actually be useful if there was an like archive functionality that didn't do that. That would be useful, or a complete feed.
Yep.
Warning about browsers, extensions, and add-ons. Quick show I did to when realized that there was a unsavory stuff started happening to my browser, and it was an out-of-date extension, not maintained. Banned by Google, but not updated in the Chromium web browser, which was a bit of a shock.
Yeah. Very nasty.
Yeah. So the next one was Tincture.
It's an odd word. It's not one that you usually come across, but yes, Tincture.
Again, 5150 on the show. It was nice, yeah. Nice hearing.
Yeah, it was, yes, it was good to hear from him.
Yeah, Audiobook Club, keep them coming. Apparently they're still doing the shows. They never stopped doing the shows, but they just had one that they thought was busted and turned out not to be. Following day, was there any comments on that, Dave? Don't think so, no.
No, I... I really enjoy these shows. I have to say, they're quite long, but I look at them as they're coming up and think, "Oh, 2 hours," huh? And then 2 hours have gone by, and I was really the chit chat that goes on and the all the banter is so, you know, yeah, it just sort of carries you along. It's great. I really do enjoy them. Thought they ought to know this.
Yeah, exactly. This is why they're, you know, you've got the community aspect of HPR. Like, the weird part about it is, if those four guys, you know, if we were standing at a zebra crossing trying to cross the road, you wouldn't recognize each other. And yet, at the same time, I feel such a bond with those guys that it's like as if, you know, you're out in the back garden and you're just passing them a cup of tea or a beer or something. And they're just part of the family that is HPR. It's absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, great. Keep them coming. A hookah with Dave, help me out, please. Why do you wait, Dave? You know I'm never going to be able to pronounce this. And yet, you just sit there going, oh, yes, let's see how we can butcher this one.
It's so fascinating to know how you're going to... No, I think it's... Is it Japanese? Is it Akaso or something like that? I don't know. But that's how I'd say it.
Because yeah, exactly.
I'd want it to be Japanese if it's not.
And this was a small sort of, what do you call them, GoPro type cheaper version camera.
Yeah.
Plenty of links in there, links to his main article. And action cameras are becoming so popular, incorporate waterproof. And this is one where there was enough information in the show notes so that I didn't feel necessary to pull it over from his website. It's kind of this. Goes back to the discussion we had before about when should you put show notes in or not, and that at the time of discussing that, this show was going into the queue. And this is one of the ones where I didn't bring it in, like, which felt right, even though for some of them I do bring them in.
Yes, I think some of them need some written material to go with the talk.
Yeah.
This one really is fine as it is. I think you're quite right. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's kind of more because it's likely that if you're interested in this particular camera, it's a physical thing that will be available in this block of time. And therefore it's reasonable to expect that his website, YouTube, will still be around for the block of time that's available.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yep. There you go. That's my logic. Don't know. It's a good feeling, probably. Not hard enough to explain that, though. Following day, Linux in-laws, Postgres. Oh, yes. Very nice one. A little bit of a win here for us getting this episode via the Linux in-laws, guys. I found this one a very interesting topic.
Yes. I've been very keen on Postgres for a long, long time. And
yes,
I didn't...
Dave.
As you know, and I probably told you at some stage, you know, just
they have
passing.
Come up in conversation once or twice. Why are you using
bloody awful, horrible MySQL? No prejudice. But Bruce Mongeon is the way he pronounces his name, I think. Is fascinating guy. I've never heard of him. I know he's a big cheese as far as Postgres is concerned, but I've never heard him talk before, and he's the most interesting guy to listen to, and interview was very good, I thought. There's a comment coming up saying that Martin's sound level is really, really low, and he doesn't have a good way. Well, this is me saying it now. He doesn't project very well. I think, Martin, you should get closer to the microphone and also speak more clearly. Of course, you've got some very interesting things to say, so say them a bit more clearly, please. But other than that, it's very, very cool.
Yep, cool.
So the comment was, which I just sort of spoke on, what Bob says, levels. Couldn't hear Martin at all, just a low mumble, says. So, yeah, I tend to agree.
Okay. Yeah, it was. I was listening to this on the bike and I couldn't hear Martin, so I switched to the next podcast and then listened to it later. Mm-hmm. And I could. So,
yeah.
But it's hard to get audio levels right. It's just.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not criticizing as such, but it's just something that perhaps.
Well, it sounded very much like it, Dave.
Well, not from the point of view of look at me in a state of perfection, and you should meet my levels. It's more, we've all been there, and I've done this too. And next time, see if you can do better.
Yeah, exactly. So the next day, generating comfortable passwords. This is an interesting one by CRVS. Using a Python program on his Dvorak keyboard to create a comfortable password that would kind of alternate left hand and right hand, which in itself makes password kind of predictable, but not by the time he's finished. To be
true. Yeah, very fascinating thing to do. Yeah,
and also quite impressed at the power that Python had in this.
Yeah. I have to say I didn't fully understand what he was doing with his Markov chain business. I'd love to hear how you did
it. Now you've started. Tukatoroto has gone nuts there listening to this.
It's the sort of probability of a given key following a specific key. So
yeah,
key, and then the probability of hitting some other one thereafter, which is to do with presumably with the sort of typing one does on a keyboard. I've tried to do this. I was looking up something I wrote in about 1980 something or other to do with a similar sort of, but nowhere near as clever, similar sort of idea in mind, trying to find frequencies of characters in common words and stuff and create passwords based on that idea. But mine, I was constrained by having 8-character passwords because machines in those days tended to say, nah, password, 8 characters, that's it. Less if you want, but 8 is all you get.
Yeah.
So, but this is very, very clever. But as I say, I'd like to understand the Markov business a bit better.
More shows, I hear.
I actually plugged in a ordinary keyboard to his table and tried it to make passwords that I could type, and it produced quite an interesting thing. You know, it's going ping pong across the keyboard in interesting ways.
Okay.
As you do.
Yep. Sigflok commented saying, thanks for this one, exclamation mark, or more like, thanks for this one. High praise indeed.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah. And then we had the Fuguita.
Hang on, I think we've just run out of month. That was the...
Dave.
That was the last one.
Can't jump forward. No.
No. So time wouldn't allow it. Timey wimey stuff and all that.
No. Missed comments from last month's on Dave Morris's mumbling while on lockdown. Mr. X said,
"Shall I?"
Yeah.
Hi Dan. Yes, you're quite correct. It was indeed the Teffyphone. This was Dan Nixon saying. Was the thing you were talking about where you played back a tape thingy with grooves in it?
And this is on your show with this Mr. Was, X.
This was a thing that Mr. X and I did together. Yeah, we were chit-chatting. There's one of these devices in the Museum of Communication across the Forth in Fife, a bit north from here. So, Teffyphone. Couldn't remember what it was called at the time. I'd never heard of it. But anyway, it certainly is a very strange device, says Mr. X. The one they had at the Museum of Communication wasn't in working condition at the time. They were in the process of trying to repair it. I hope they succeeded. I must thank you for bringing this up, as I really enjoyed re-watching the YouTube video link you gave, which gives an excellent introduction of the device. The sound quality seems surprisingly good. I watched the video while sitting out in the sun in my back garden. All the best, Mr. X.
Yeah, it was a good video. Actually.
I looked at the video. Yeah, the video is fantastic. The quality and the length of some of these things is quite amazing. And you can skip around between the tracks, and amazing piece of technology.
Yeah. So we do the comments from past shows. So
shall I just explain?
Yeah, please, please.
Operator and 3056. Operator had not sent in all the notes he'd meant to, so he sent the missed bits in as a comment, which I intercepted and actually glued into the notes. But I left the comment standing, and put a message in the notes to say that the comment had been absorbed into the notes. We're just going to mention this a bit later on in the any other business.
You can do it now if you want. Or...
Well, it was just really to say, if you have corrections, it's far easier. You've omitted something, you've made a mistake, whatever, and you want it to be fixed. It's far, far easier for us to just go and change the notes on your behalf than it is for you to send in a comment mentioning the changes. And part of that is because the comment mechanism can strip things out that might mess up what you're going to do. It'll take out backslashes, for example. And yeah. That's one point. Another point is that the comments don't get copied across to the archive.org. So if people tend to go and read your notes on archive.org, they won't see the changes unless they're in the notes. Because if I make a change to the notes, I'm propagate them through to the Internet Archive. So it's generally a better approach to contact admin@hackerpublicradio.org and let us know what needs change, and we'll do it.
And we do it regularly as well. By we, I mean you.
When we get these requests, we do. I've written scripts that let me do it relatively easy, as you might have expected. Yeah. So it's not a big deal.
Few comments on that. Three, actually. Number one is we deliberately strip out stuff from the common fields because back in the day, when I took over helping out here at HPR, we were being absolutely killed with comments. And even today, we get occasionally people who try to mess with the common system. There's about one or two attempts every second to get into HPR, and that's even with all the stuff that Josh has in place. So yeah, that's thing number one. Thing number two is that we do want to move to a way where people can submit their shows as a diff and update their shows themselves, but that's on the long finger, unfortunately, due to me. And the third thing was very important, but I can't remember what it was, Dave.
don't ask me, I'm not sure. I was having trouble remembering my points.
Oh, yes, about Internet Archive. If you're thinking that we just have our shows on, that we just do the hosting on Internet Archive, we don't. We have actually, Dave has managed to get the shows over there looking absolutely fantastic. And as a result, they're using a lot of indexing that has been provided by archive.org. And as a result of archive.org being such a big website, if you're searching for a HPR episode, you're far more likely to get redirected to the archive.org website as opposed to the HPR website itself, which is no big deal because that's, from our point of view, it doesn't really matter. It's all about the content. Where it's hosted is not really that important. So it's important that we keep them, just so you do realize you're far more likely that people are going to find your show via archive.org than via HPR.
Yep. Good.
Okay, Clacke had a show, The Joy of Pip Tools and PyEnv Virtual Environments. And Clacke replied, "The joy is real. I have been using PyEnv Virtual Environment for a month now, and I am reminded every day of how happy I am never to run into another pip envir run or pip envir shell again." So that's good.
Cool. Next comment is to Linux In-Laws episode, series 1, episode 6, Porn and Trump. And it's from Frank, who says, the sketch, sorry to say, but I found the sketch not funny at all. Not because I'm a Trump supporter, far from it, but it was just not funny in a comical sense. It gave me a sense of, I'm not sure, it was a Fremdscham? And I had to, I'm not sure what that means. And I had to skip over it after listening to the first minute or so. Please also work on your audio balancing. First, there was a low volume talk, then suddenly a much louder techno jingle right before the sketch.
Yeah, I think that that was already mentioned in a comment earlier about the audio levels. Friend this is like friend shaming. So it's it's to feel ashamed about something somebody else has done, to be embarrassed because someone else has embarrassed themselves and doesn't know it. So it's being not shaming your friend, but being shamed by your friend, or not by your friend, being shamed for your friend, I guess.
Yeah. Feeling embarrassed is sounds a bit more appropriate.
Cringe. RFC part one, but Clacky. Fluffy mentioned atom tombstones defined in the atom deleted entry element and gives a link to the RFC. Cool. That was Clacky commenting himself. And David Windigo commented on yours. Do you want to comment? No, I'll do his. His, and then you can do yours in your own voice. Dave, I hope you'll be excited to hear that the Shiva plug is still very well supported in Debian. I had one up and running with the latest version until very recently. Here's the resource I used to set up mine, link included. I have a hard time justifying keeping mine running, what with the Raspberry Pi and others being so much more full-featured and powerful, but it's definitely an interesting piece of hardware. To which you replied,
I said, hi, Windigo. Thanks for the link. I'd love to get my old Shiva plug up and running again, and this looks like the site to help me do so. I don't actually have a use for it at the moment. It had a USB disk on it, and I used to use it as a Git repo package called Gitosis, I think, and I could access it when away from home. Then it was a playground for learning about Bind. Then the disk crashed. Anyway, this is now on my to-do list. Thank you. So, yeah, I think the point about Shiva plug in comparison to a Raspberry Pi, especially the new Raspberry Pi 4 with all that RAM, is a good one. But it seems such a shame because it's a beautifully crafted device, and it sat behind the sofa and plugged into the wall for many years doing its stuff. So maybe that was why the disk crashed. It was the cat was jumping on it or something, but it seems a shame not to use it for something, but it would be nice to give it a try, but I'm not sure what to use it for, to be honest.
Strange. I had one and it kind of broke within a few months.
All right. Weird. Mine actually broke, but I sent it back and got it repaired. I don't remember what was wrong with it actually now. But yeah, suddenly, I think the power supply, maybe? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
The power supply was external, wasn't it? I don't know. I don't know what it was. But it was my main, it was a Raspberry Pi precursor, and it was an important machine. I had a little consultancy business at the time, and I used to go to my clients and pull down stuff off my Git repo when I was there. Since they were the university I used to work for mostly, and it was easy to do. But it was a good thing to have around at the time, but it's more nostalgia than anything else now, I guess.
The Wednesday night event has a few slots have become available. So if anybody wants to join the D&D thing on Wednesday nights, it is good fun by the sounds of how much my son is laughing during it. It is at Wednesday at 1700 UTC. That's 1700 UTC. So on Wednesday nights, which is something like I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning, Plateau time. So, yeah, I don't know. I told him, but apparently he's running lots of games. But if you're, I know some people were asking, were there any other free slots available? So if there are, please get in touch with Plateau or ourselves here, admin@hackerpublicradio.org, and we'll pass you on the details. It's actually on the same HPR server, so you just turn up.
Ken, I think your connection's dropping out.
Hello?
I think can you hear me? I think you've had a few dropouts. I did hear, I think we heard most of what you said, but there's just having a few bandwidth issues, perhaps.
Yeah, this is very sad and depressing. But okay, main takeaway. There's still another opportunity to join the D&D thing. UTC, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, 1700. Did you get that?
Yep, that was good.
And there's not a lot of point going through the events calendar because they're all going to be online. So have a look yourself, see what you can want to join. And other feedback. Oh, I remember this. This is a while back. Okay, our feedback from the show notes. So most shows we process require us to make some level of modification to get them posted. This ranges from fixing tags to complete rewrites of the show notes or verifying whether the intros were added or not. Each modification that we make means that more human intervention and prevents us from being able to completely automate the upload process. In addition, there is a non-trivial amount of time needed to fix these issues, and this can range from a few minutes to an hour per show. And with 260 shows per year, this mounts up. So we don't normally contact hosts when these issues come up, as it's usually quicker to fix them ourselves, rather than composing emails and waiting for a reply that may never come. For the most part, our experience has been that hosts are willing to fix these issues if they become aware of them. As part of the ongoing steps towards automation, would hosts be open to the idea of getting a processing report once they have posted their shows? This would list all the issues, the test tools found, and the steps that we needed to take to rectify them. And actually then making changes to shows after upload. Sometimes errors occur and then we have to do the same thing again. So essentially what I would like to know is, from hosts, would you like to get feedback if your show needed to be modified in any way or not? And it's, to be honest, usually not new hosts that cause these issues. It's that we have older hosts and things have moved on in the way we process shows and that sort of thing. Would you like, is that something that would be useful to you, or would you hate us if we started doing that? Can't take the hate, Dave, I can't take it.
Fair enough.
Should probably put that on the mailing list, actually.
I think that might be smarter. Yeah. So people will notice it probably.
So they heard it here first anyway. And then I'll also add it to the mailing list so we get it again next month. And contributors for sending in updates to the past shows has been Windigo. Tell us all about that, Dave.
Yes, Windigo very kindly sent in a batch of 10 updates, which he is inclined to do from time to time, which we thank him enormously, and they've now been added. So we're gradually whittling away the number left to do.
Hello, are you keeping track of this over time? 536 shows?
There are 536 that need work. Yes, indeed. I don't usually make reference to this in the notes, usually because it takes me time to go and find the page. And see.
Okay, yeah. It's right there on the first page.
I know.
This though is featuring heavily in my yet to be documented plans for HPR. I use this quite a lot now, this page. If you want to find back like FOSDEM interview or Core Boot and Flash Core Boot, for instance, I wanted to do something on, take one of the Chromebooks about Chromebook, Core Boot on it. And I went through this, found the three shows that they were in, and copied and pasted what I needed. So it's very useful.
Yep. We did talk at one point about turning the alphabetical index or the tag summary thing towards the end of this page into something more permanent as part of HPR in general, rather than just being part of the please fix the tag issue thing. So
yeah, no, it will be. It is just a matter of time.
Yep. Okay. Good.
Yep. And you can already see these tags appearing on the, if you go to the homepage and go to Get Shows, Full Episode Guide, then you've got the tags there as well. And what I want to do is have each of those tags be now a clickable link. So that's something that's in the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. All right, anything else?
I think that's it.
To go and start cleaning the toilets. Great.
Your timing's wrong. You should have done the dusting.
Yeah, exactly. Dusting done, toilets out now. Anyway, yes, there we go.
Great. What else?
Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.